occasionally people will mistake me for somebody else. And I was at the Apple store recently. We both were. This was during COVID, so we were wearing masks. And the security guard said, you know, we were talking about how long it would take. And the security guard came up to us and said, I wish I could get you to the head of the line because I'm a big fan. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he said, yeah, I've seen all your movies. And he started listing movies that I wasn't in.
500 Days of Summer.
Oh, yeah. I said, oh, you mean this other one. He goes, no. Very funny. I know you were in 500 Days of Summer. And
Inception.
Like, uh-huh. All these like really good movies.
You're like, I wish I was in that.
Yes. He thought I was Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And I said, no. And he thought I was like trying to keep a low profile. He goes, okay. Don't worry. You're like, your secret's safe with me. And I was like, I'm not. But
and it's ironic that this happened at the Apple store of all places.
I know. Life could be a dream. You're listening to Life is Short. I am your host, Joseph Gordon, Justin Long. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. With me, as always, is my brother, Christian Gordon-Levitt.
Don't get people excited.
No. Yeah, the last time I saw Joe was in New York. He was with a bunch of, have I told you this?
Oh, the clowns?
Yeah, he was, it was on one of those little shops on Ludlow. Joe was with a bunch of, Russian clowns who aren't...
I thought they were Romanian clowns.
Oh, maybe. Or are you conflating that with the Seinfeld episode where he dates the Romanian gymnast? I don't know. But he was such an interesting guy. And that's just one little example of why he's so interesting. He's like, you know, he's into so many different creative things. And I know he was... At that point, he was going through either a Russian or a Romanian clown face. And I was like, he was like, this is Sergi, and this is I. And they were like, hello. And they were these, he was into it. He was like, doing an immersion thing.
He is very interesting. He's also very handsome, I would say.
Oh, that's the main reason it was
fun. So your eyes, even though you're wearing a mask, just your eyes being recognized as his eyes, I think it's a pretty flattering thing.
Oh, very. Oftentimes, that's a rare occasion when it's like, I'm mistaken for somebody and it's flattering. And this happened to you too, I know, where lately, since you've been on Instagram and we've been doing the show, occasionally people will be like, tag their friend and they're like, oh, how much, you look exactly like this guy.
Invariably, I'll click on the person and be like, really? They think I look like him? I think I might have a slightly higher opinion of my own face than is objectively
true.
Yeah,
I guess I do too, because oftentimes, except for the Joseph Gordon-Levitt moments, I'm not flattered by it. It's like somebody who... it's also often, and this is not the unflattering part, it's often somebody who is of Latin descent or a Southeast Asian descent.
For you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you definitely have an Asian flair.
Uh-huh, I've gotten...
I mostly get either you or David Schwimmer, and I think both of those are pretty flattering.
Oh, thanks. I've gotten David Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer's a little more flattering.
But of the friends, he was like the dorky one, right?
Yes.
The most flattering for me is get occasionally Keanu Reeves. That always makes me happy.
Doesn't beat that.
Yeah. God, that's person goals. Anyway.
You know who else you look like?
Who?
Our guest today.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's why we're talking about it. We've been mistaken for one another, in fact.
She is 100% your celebrity doppelganger, I would say.
Our guest today is Carrie Brownstein from the two groundbreaking things. Slater Kinney, the band, and the incredible show Portlandia. I did the show on IMDb podcast, and I had to pick three movies that meant the most to me, and like I wanted to talk about. And I think if it were a TV version of that, Portlandia would be on it. It'd be Portlandia,
really?
Seinfeld, maybe Simpsons. Yeah.
Wow.
How about
it's high praise.
Oh, it's the best.
Three favorite shows. Well, now I feel bad not including Portlandia since she's our guest. I love Portlandia, but I don't know if I'd put in my top three. Top three is tough to crack.
Okay, well.
I mean, you got Alf, Charles in Charge, and Empty Nest.
That's true.
How do you crack those three?
That is true. That's true. And Designing Women.
Yes.
By the way, I saw Designing Women in Maggie's Q. Has she
not
watched
Maggie
that?
Q.
No, in
in Maggie's Q.
Yeah, not in Maggie Q. It's an important distinction, an important
S. It was weird. You saw an X-ray of her, and you saw it.
She swallowed a DVD of Designing Women.
It's so strange.
You know, if Maggie Q heard that joke, she'd be like, she'd laugh, and then she'd go, so stupid. I can hear. Anyway, I love the show, and we'll talk, you know, if you love it too, or if you're not familiar with it even, I still think it's interesting to talk about. And I just was so honored to be on it and talk about all that.
So you look like her. You right. look very much like her. Yeah. So that led to you being on the show.
Well, here's how. Well, here's how it happened. I would always get people on Twitter. When I first got on Twitter, people would tweet that a lot to both of us. And we'd occasionally run into one another, Carrie and I would, and we'd always bring that. That would always come up, like, oh, I got another message, you know. And she's like, well, you got to come on the show. We should. And I was like, oh, I'd love the show. She knew I loved the show. So eventually they wrote a part for somebody who looks like Carrie's character, Lance. Carrie and Fred Armisen do these characters, Lance and Nina. And
it's like a extreme, gender reversal.
Yeah, but extreme versions of the gender. And Carrie's is that Lance is like this sort of tough, works on motorcycles and is, you know, doesn't want to like be emotional around Nina.
And Fred's is like, Nina's like, oh, just wants to get married. And,
you know, it's just like these extremes of traditional gender norms. I played Lance's soon-to-be stepfather. I start dating Lance's mom, who, incidentally, I don't think we talk about this, was supposed to be Cher. When I found out I was doing it, they were like, oh, and Cher's going to be your lover, playing Lance's mom. That didn't happen, but it was a great actress all the same, and it was one of the most fun jobs I've ever done.
Let's get into it.
Okay.
Thanks for that context. That was really...
Are you being sarcastic?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm not always sarcastic.
I know, but when you compliment, I also felt like it was rambly a little bit.
No, I thought it was. It
okay, good.
You hit all the points.
Oh, cool. Okay, I'll take that.
And for people who already knew that information, I'm sorry that you had to hear it again. Yeah. But I think it that context is sort of important.
Okay, good. So now the most important part of this show, my catch up with my doppelganger, my bizarro, and my friend Carrie Brownstein.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
God, you know, Carrie, that... Your song, Everyone I Know Is Wired. It's been, my brother and I directed our first movie. We're really excited about it. And we have used that song. I think we can get it. We're talking to your, late, whoever.
I think we already approved it.
Oh, no shit.
This is the official.
Oh.
This is contractual.
Are you recording?
I'm recording. It's yeah.
Oh yes, I was beating around the bush. I didn't know how to say Have you heard anything about? Oh my God, we love it's. It's like okay, great.
It's legally binding. What we're doing
Now. I can't wait to show it to you.
No, I'm excited. That's by the way, congratulations. That's a big
thanks,
big deal,
Carrie. Yeah, we're so happy with it. And I don't know if you know those Melanie Linsky and Judy Greer, but they just give the most incredible. Yeah,
I know both of them briefly. Well, Judy, we had on Portlandia, and I adore her.
Yeah.
And Melanie, I think I have met very briefly, and I'm just a huge fan of hers. I'm a big fan of both of those actors.
Me too. You will be even more so, I think. That's great. Okay, well, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, I'm glad we...
Okay.
Deals. Just, this is about deals. Is this podcast called Deals?
But you were in Austin then, or L.A.?
No, I was in L.A. Oh. I know we have mutual friends in Austin, and I have thought of living there, but I lived there once for a very short amount of time. I hesitate to use the term.
Well, unfortunately, I think you maybe told me that like around the time that we were hanging out more and around.
I was like, oh, I live in Austin now. What a, well, or, I'm an unreliable narrator right off the bat.
Well, okay. So we got the song. You're not living in Austin.
Where are you? Where are you? You're in the Berkshires.
I'm actually in Connecticut now. We have a little little studio room in not far from where I grew up in Connecticut, but I've been spending a lot of time in Massachusetts in the Berkshires. Yeah.
Nice.
And I just got an RV. There's this RV company, called Boho. And I just decided to have them make me an RV, so I'm excited actually to drive out to your neck of the woods, and I just miss traveling. I miss being out. You seem like a wanderlust type person.
Yes and no. I think touring from such a young age. Mm. I mean, young. I mean 19 or 20. I don't mean like from the age of 5, but
right. Like a Von Trapp.
Yeah, no, not in a family band, but I think it really instilled this sense of nomadicism in me, and I do get restless if I'm in one place for a while, but when I'm gone, when I'm traveling, I miss being home, so I sort of need the mix of it.
Very similar, yeah. But now, are you? I know you're creating now, you're being creative, or attempting to. Do you feel that restlessness now while you're working?
I don't. I think because at the beginning of the pandemic, my band had just gotten home from tour. So we came back from Europe like on March 2nd. We were probably one of the last bands to complete like a full tour.
Wow.
Definitely in Europe, but probably in the US, all bands stopped touring like a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
And so I was ready to be home. And then I thought once travel was restricted that I would be restless. But after a while, I just wasn't. But I did have to sort of reconfigure my mindset to just being home. And I started walking a lot more. I've always been someone who takes hikes and walks as a way of thinking and a way of like processing what I'm working on, just to kind of get that input and feel porous. But I really started walking many miles, like kind of turning into one of those sort of like urban hikers where you just set out because there was no traffic. So I would just...
Wow,
Yeah.
With a stick?
Not with a stick.
Okay.
That's
like Portlandia sketch territory.
No, I know. Yeah. I always try to avoid that here. I feel conspicuous if I'm embodying something. But by the way, all those characters were based on iterations of myself anyway. So I'm always a little bit embodying those. But no, it was just that there's no remember how there's at the beginning there was kind of no destinations because there was nothing open. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to walk and get coffee or...
Yeah.
You know, so you just start realizing, oh, I guess I can cross the bridge and go downtown, and then I can, you know, it just, there was sort of no boundaries for a while, and also psychologically, which made it also very torturous.
Yeah, I hate saying anything, you know, remotely positive about this time we're in, but I noticed that, I mean, that is a positive byproduct that I noticed too, even here where I live, which is an upper scale suburban. I remember my parents when I was a kid, because my dad was a teacher, my mom was an actress, and we didn't grow up with a lot of money. So they would always call everyone yuppies, you know, like this. So it's an area where there were a lot of affluence and stuff. But even here, I've noticed a lot of people, so many more than I ever remember, just walking and families outside and looking at fireflies and the sun. There's something kind of nice about a return to nature, even in this suburban place where I live. It's nice to see.
I was kind of charmed actually seeing people because, you know, when I've lived in this neighborhood for a long time, so you sort of know who the walkers are, who the runners are, who the, you know, skateboarders are. But there was such an influx, and there were definitely people where I was like, you've never taken a walk here before. Or like, this is your first time, this is your first time jogging. And yeah. But I felt very encouraging of all the new runners because I'm a very terrible runner. I'm not good at it. So I was like, and even just the people kind of walking for the first time, like people that usually just like drove to work, then drove to the gym. And now we're like, I am walking.
Well, I've noticed, I've driven, I just realized when people had stopped driving and the gym was closed, I realized the gym was like a 4-minute walk from where I live, but I'd get in my car and I drive there, which is ludicrous. It kind of defeats the purpose. What do you mean that you're a bad runner? Does that mean like you look funny doing it? You don't have good form?
Oh, I know. I look amazing doing it, but I just... you've never seen a gazelle like me in track shoes, but
lithe and graceful. Yeah.
No, I mean that I don't always have the mental fortitude for it, and I get bored and all the things that sort of limit you as a runner. I think you kind of have like meditation. It's something where you just get better at it, and it feels painful, or like anything really. But it kind of takes that. This discipline, not just physically, but mentally, that I sometimes just peace out on really early.
Me too. It's hard for me to shut my brain down. And I know meditation would be a very positive thing in my life. It's embarrassing how many people have recommended it to me.
Same.
Yeah. And I'll try it. I'll be like, oh, you know, I'll give this a... And 5 minutes in, the thoughts are going and I feel like I'm not accomplishing anything. I get restless, I guess, pretty easily.
Yeah, me too. I used Headspace for a while, which is kind of a great app, actually. Yeah. And they really break it down into small, very achievable goals.
Okay.
Add me to the list of people recommending meditation to you as someone who doesn't meditate. Those are the best people to give you advice.
What are you writing now? Is it music that you're writing, or are you writing a book?
I have been writing music. I've been finishing a script, and so that's been the majority of the summer. And it started really slowly. Early on when the pandemic started, I think there was this like false, remember that whole thing that was circulating, like Shakespeare finished, I can't remember what it was, like King Lear or something during, you know, the bubonic plague or whatever. Uh-huh. And it was like, it was as if, and I do think now that people have kind of, you know, dug themselves out of despair or are finding ways of dealing with like the multitudes of despair that is going on. I do think there will be some interesting art and creative output from this time. But early on, I found it completely debilitating to kind of sit in the uncertainty. And so I got kind of a slow start. You know, what I was like, oh, I'm going to knock this out. I mean, by April 1st, I'll be done with this and probably writing, you know, a novel. That just didn't happen. So it's
like Shakespeare.
Yes, all of us are Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. So what was it? But was it an idea that had been percolating and you'd just been sitting on it?
This is an assignment. I mean, this is something I signed on to do. And that's actually been hard too, because that's not usually the world that I work in. And it was I don't know how much I can speak to it, but basically I was excited about this idea. It involved a lot of research. I wanted to take it on. I love the producer, you know, it was already set up somewhere studio wise. Like it just,
oh wow.
And so I went for it, and it was hard because it's just not a world I'm used to working in terms of, you know, like researching. It's based on real people. Hmm. So yeah, it's been a learning experience for sure.
And this would probably be this around the time that you guys, your time now would used to have been occupied by Portlandia writing, right? I mean, it was just like, I remember it was like the four or five of you that would write all of those.
Yeah, towards the end, more like, I think we had maybe seven or eight writers, maybe seven, which is still pretty small.
Yeah,
so that ended, I think, two summers ago. And then the last few summers, I was either directing or, I guess, last summer, I was getting ready to go out on tour with Slater Kinney. So two things which I have been a really nice substitute for Portlandia. And I won't even call them substitutes because some of them existed before Portlandia. But yeah, no, this has been the mellowest summer in terms of work, I guess.
I bet. Well, there's also that, I just remember you're reminding me of that, the early part of the lockdown and that. I do remember that, how people were like, this is a time to be productive. Doesn't mean we can't be productive creatively. And I remember struggling with the idea of there being a future where entertainment would still be worthwhile. And it everything seems so dire and kind of like day to day that I remember thinking, well, it's plus we were finishing up this edit, but, and even that seemed like, what are we doing? Like this, the world is falling apart and we're making this like fart comedy. And I would go back and forth between that and like, well, people need to laugh and it's going to be good for the world. But I think a lot of people maybe were, a lot of friends of mine were wrestling with that and have not really been able to, you know, process this time creatively. So I'm glad you are.
Well, yeah, with caveats, because I felt the same sense of futility. Are you drinking a Waterloo? I could match your watermelon, or sorry, grapefruit Waterloo with my own grapefruit Waterloo.
Oh, really? You should do that. Do you have it?
I'll go downstairs and get it. Okay. Yeah. Because our last picture, I mean, we're almost even in a similar outfit. Like I could just pull my hair back. We can hold up the Waterloo and just claim the siblinghood that people really want for us. Actually, you know, they just want us to be the same person.
Yeah. You know, what's annoying is I still occasionally on social media or, you know, I'll hear from somebody and they're like, you and Carrie Brownstein. I'm like, yeah,
we did a whole thing.
We did a whole thing. We took it to its like ultimate conclusion.
The most absurd conclusion, but yeah. You know, yeah. I left Twitter, and I'm barely on Instagram. But yes, when I was still on Twitter, for sure, people love the comparisons. Which I mean, I still find charming. Very totally fine with all of those.
I am too. Very flattered by it. But I and also it led to such a fun creative thing, getting to do that show, which, you know, I'm such a huge fan of. That show was just so fun to do, and I bet you miss it. I mean, you must miss it. You must miss that outlet.
I do miss it. I miss the absurdist lens through which to process phenomena and just the world, you know. And I think now more than ever, or I mean, I think it functioned in the same way then, but, you know, sometimes things feel so outrageous that absurdity or surrealism are kind of the only ways to make sense of it, because coming at it straight on is impossible, because it's feels like such a bizarro world, especially with you know, Trump and everything. So yeah, I miss that a little bit. And just kind of dissecting the minutiae of things was fun. But I, you know, 8 years is a good run, and it was nice to sort of just leave it before, well, people still liked it, you know?
Yeah. And it was still so good. But yeah, I know what you mean. There must be moments now, you stop short of saying now especially, but because there is so much going on it socially and culturally that there are times when I think, I mean, I had nothing to do with the show. There are times when I think, God, this would just, if you leaned into this just a little bit, it would be Portlandia sketch. I mean, it would, the absurdities of,
I think people do that with SNL too. When there's some like political moment going on and SNL isn't on the air, people think, oh, I wish, you know, you sort of, people view, you know, politics or view culture sometimes through television, especially, you know, whether it was, I remember when the Colbert Report went off the air as Jon Stewart, mm-hmm. people sort of miss that, you
yeah,
know,
for sure.
mediation. And I think people miss it on SNL when, you know, there's a great hearing in the set, or, you know, they're like, oh, I wish we had SNL for this.
Yeah, if there's yeah. some political character in the theater of the political theater, that's, but like, Portlandia was so, played so real. I mean, that was the great, one of the many things about it that I think will last for so long. It was played so real, and so many of the things that it skewered were, it was done in such a subtle way that you didn't have to, like, you just leaned into it just a little bit, and it was perfect satire. I'm thinking that's why I even had a paranoia about asking you to do this. Like, I think I even texted you, like, this feels like a friends who, one of whom feels obligated to do the other friend's podcast, and everyone has podcasts now. And I just thought, oh my God, it reminded me of a Portlandia thing that, like, you and Fred were constantly getting asked to do podcasts or something.
Or, no, I know what you're saying. I think there was the way we kind of dissected those very small kind of human, like, blunders or interactions yeah. did become, I mean, for a while, you know, Portlandia was sort of this adjective that people used when they were trying to describe something that was awkward or sort of something that started grounded and all of a sudden felt very, you know, insane, which almost any interaction can be. Like you're saying, these yeah. like, you know, the asking to be on podcasts. I feel guilty when I ask people for anything too, but I was okay, happy good. To do this.
Okay, all right, good. It was in the context of Portlandia and the shining a light on the absurdity of these moments. It made such perfect sense. I didn't know this about you, that you were a sociolinguist. You were a sociolinguist major?
Yes, I was.
Wait, tell people, because this is something we just heard about. My brother and I, at the end of the show, we kind of dissect the conversation, and then we read a letter from somebody, and somebody in one of their letters said to Christian, in a complimentary way, you would be a great sociolinguist. And neither of us had heard the term.
Had not heard the term until I went to college. I mean, I'd obviously heard of linguistics and, you know, there's many branches of linguistics, psycholinguistics and sociolinguistics. And I had this professor there, Susan Fixdall, who was a sociolinguist. And it was kind of everything that I already was curious about in the world and wanted to explore. You know, it was just that intersection of society and language. It was how people talk. It was conversation analysis, discourse analysis, as it's called. So there's all these offshoots, like sociolinguistics encompasses, like, you know, animal language and child language acquisition. But the part that I loved was discourse analysis and really looking into ways that people communicate with one another. And I find it fascinating to this day. And So I think that served me well with Portlandia, because so much of what we were doing on that show
totally.
Was just these
analysis
and observational, like, sort of, you know, humor of, like, yeah, just the ways people also sort of perform and enact, like, personhood with each other.
Totally.
And because it was Fred and I, so we were often permutations of different couples. It was like, how do people perform couplehood? And the ways that, you know, a pair of people sort of move through the world with a singular identity, and how that identity is always in flux and at stake, was always really interesting to us. So we often built characters out of, like, these couplings.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And the couples were, obviously, some of them were broader than others, like Nina and Lance, who, of course, you had a lot of interactions with. But as the years went on, actually, those characters started kind of broad, but by the time you were on the show, there was a real, I think, empathy towards, like, we found so much more compassion and empathy towards the characters the longer we embody them. Because with sketch, often, you know, you're always, sometimes it's broad strokes, but because we got to do that show for 8 years and it became more character-based because we knew, well, this is what people go back to other TV shows for. They go back for the characters.
Yeah.
We started to, you know, kind of infuse them with a lot more, I think, nuance than you often get when you just do sketch.
Yeah, more humanity. Yeah, I'm now thinking about, like, it was the Pullout King, like, for example, the Pullout King, was that, yes. That was like an earlier,
yes.
It was like, that felt more, is that kind of what you're talking about? Whereas later then you explored their relate, like the dynamics of their relationship. And when they, that, the episode I did where they get married and there's something very touching about, I mean, it's like, it's ludicrous because Fred and, you know, that, I just don't know how you kept a straight face. So you guys were so good about not breaking, but
he was. I mean, some of those early episodes, especially because we were shooting so quickly and didn't always have time to get coverage or to do other takes. The only available footage of me is just laughing, you know.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over, because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
I mean, I tried not to break, but there was so much improvisation that, you know, if there's a funny joke in a script, you kind of get used to it. But, you know, if Fred or one of the other actors just improvises something that I've never heard before and is completely hilarious and ridiculous, then I can't help it.
It was really hard. I remember when we were doing that stuff with I had the camera and we did that scene and Fred's just started going, yeah. He started calling me you're such a shutterbug. He started calling me a shutterbug. And he found these words that I hadn't heard anyone use in so long. Like something like that, like a shutterbug. It was so hard for me. It was really hard to not laugh. But I remember like kind of biting my tongue. But I'm sure if I were on it regularly, I wouldn't have that discipline.
First, to address it, yes, Fred is really great. As we're, you know, where some comedians kind of go to a place that's like raunchier to be funny, like,
yeah,
Fred always finds it in the sort of innocence of language. It is disorienting to have someone use the word shutterbug like as if it's a put down, you know, like it's just the meanest thing. And it's, there's something so weird and contradictory about, you know, being made fun of using this term that's just like kind of charming and like colloquial.
Right, right. And then looking at him, and he is in that like wig and the bob, and he that's the thing. He's so committed. It's I think part of what made that so difficult to get through was he looks absurd. I mean, he looks ridiculous, but he is so committed to being that woman that it's like. Which is what allowed, I guess, you guys to explore some deeper things with those characters, and you're both so committed. I just loved being around it. It was just so fun to watch because I was such fans of those characters specifically too that it was cool to just see you guys doing it.
It was fun. I loved when you were doing the show. I still have some of my favorite photos are just outtakes of us like sitting around looking pretty identical. Mm.
And I was surprised, yeah, and that voice and getting to do that, and I was surprised to learn that you guys would lower it just a little bit.
Oh, yes, yeah. For sure. I think early on they really pitched it down, like for the cacao sketch is really pitched down, and I think they sort of, well, I sort of then ended up kind of emulating the pitch down that they had done, and so then I think they could split the difference.
Oh, you know?
Yeah.
Ben Fred doesn't, right?
He just his was like that. He just did a natural.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And were those characters based on specific people? You said that they're versions of yourselves, but are there characters that you were doing that you could actually point to and say this is Nancy and Ryan?
Right. We did have some of that. Like I said, a lot of them were like if we had taken specific chapters in our lives or like a moment in our life where we did something that felt not even extreme, but just you sort of have to pause and be like, is that me? That was such a weird moment. We would sort of make a character like if that was only that, like Kath, who's had the ponytail, like she's just always at 10. You know, Kath now is probably like.
Would she be a Karen?
Yes, I was just going to say she's kind of a Karen, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, where it's just that, like, very, that white female entitlement and just. Yeah, I mean, she is a true Karen, although, in our show, she was normally, you know, usually just kind of going after anyone. But yes, so annoying. But I see that, and it's like that's a self-critique, you know. That's me, like, not, you know, not ever with cruelty, but like, you know, someone's on a plane or something, and you're just like someone with a cat behind me on a plane, and I'm like, excuse me, you know, your cat is, you know, it's just it's whenever you get that tone, and you're like, God, what is that tone? I could just ask the woman with the cat behind me, I could say, hey, you know, like, I can feel the cat under my seat. But instead, it's just like, you're like, why did I start at 10? Why am I starting here?
You're not even being direct. I found myself doing that. My brother's girlfriend, Margaret, we've been in quarantine together. And there's certain things, not many things get under my skin, but certain things do. And one of which is she leaves the vents on in the bathroom. So, like, it's such a dumb, silly thing. But, like, so instead of just saying, hey, Maggie, could you just turn the vents off when you leave? I was like, hey, I noticed that the vents after you leave are still on. It was like, what are you trying to say? Then you have to, like, translate what the other person's saying, which is probably where a sociolinguist would have fun interpreting how that person is asking for something.
So much hedging. And it's very passive-aggressive.
Hedging. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess to answer your question, so there were some that were versions of us, and then we took a lot of our parents' friends and also our own friends. Yeah, so Nina and Lance, I'm not sure who specifically they were based on, but I think for me playing Lance, I was just drawing from my own sort of like heightened versions of and probably broken versions of masculinity. And I'm not sure about Fred, but yeah, it was often, you know, we would just, you know, think of our most sort of beloved friends and just try to explore them through humor.
When you were a kid, did you have aspirations of doing something like that? I know you do so many different things, but what was the thing when you were growing up that you thought, oh, this is what my future's going to be like? Or was there ever there that moment?
No, I definitely was a performer as a kid, probably mm-hmm. to the detriment of myself and everyone in my family. Like, I was someone who really, like, was constantly putting on plays with the neighborhood kids. And
oh, really?
Just really, like, hey, guys, I know it's summer, but if we could just meet at 10 a.m., you know, on Peter's deck, we're going to have a rehearsal, you know, like...
For Lanford Wilson's 5th of July.
Yes, so bossy and just always trying to get everyone else. Everyone else just wanted a summer. People wanted to ride their dirt bikes and build forts and like watch soap operas or just like play, run through the sprinkler, like just whatever. And I was like, okay, well, we're forming a Duran Duran cover band this summer and... I'll be Simon Le Bon, of course, you know, and like, so, and you know, that's I would ask my dad like, hey, so the show is, and I was wondering if you could, you know, it was before like Xerox, I'd be like, but if you could make copies at your office, like he had a Xerox machine. So he would like come home with these like flyers. Our cover band was called Little D Duran Duran. And, We never put on the show, but it just like, I really loved having that discipline for the summer where we had, and the rest of the kids,
her name is
they would like begrudgingly come along because something to do, you know, it was like, oh, okay, well, we'll just hang out. And,
it's an activity.
Yeah, it was an activity. So I always, and then I did like theater in school, you know, kind of a drama nerd, but when I hit like, high school and was 15, I just discovered music. I mean, I'd always listened to music, but I was kind of in the 80s pop world. And when I got to high school, I met these kids who were actually listening to punk and new wave. And I just thought, oh, what's this? And it was so much more accessible as an outlet. Like I was always, I grew up outside Seattle in the suburbs, and I never really thought like I'm gonna move to LA and try to make it. Like I just I didn't really have that part of the dream down. I just knew that I liked performing and I liked it as a way of connecting with other people. So when I found music, it just seemed so much more immediate, and it really sort of dovetailed with my teen angst at the right time. So I just sort of took it on and started playing that. So then all the kind of writing and performing stuff got a little bit sidetracked until later, when people who knew me from Slater Kinney were like, whoa, Portlandia. Yeah. I was like, actually, now I'm kind of doing a combination of the things I've always wanted to do.
And is that how did you I think you had said you met Fred through music more during the Slater Kinney days.
Yeah. So I had heard of his band Trenchmouth, which was his kind of Chicago like post-punk band. And we were in the same circles, although I really never met him during that time. I think I even stayed at his house. He was on tour.
Weird.
And I crashed at his house in Chicago with his roommate and bandmate Damon. So it was like, I knew of this guy. And then it was suddenly like, hey, that drummer from Trenchmouth is on Saturday Night Live. Like, it was just so weird. I mean, he had, you know, stepping stones in between. But in terms of, like, what the world knew, it was like, whoa, this guy's on SNL. I remember Slater Kinney, we were playing in New York, and he said, hey, you guys should come to SNL. We said, well, we have a show. But he's like, then come afterwards. You know, there's always an after party. So I went to that and met him that night. Yeah. And, you know, he was very cute. He was wearing actually a button with my face on it, which, you know, it could go either way. I could think this is creepy or I could think this is flattering. It was, to be fair, a button of me holding a koala. So it's hard to make that sinister. You know, it's
especially when it's on the lapel of this very kind of puckish, like innocent, vaguely effeminate guy. This like very non-threatening.
And he is such a music fan, and I always knew that. And I think so much of his comedic work actually is a way of him expressing his music fandom. You know, whether it's his like more recent stand-up, you know, Comedy for Drummers. It's always, you know, music is definitely sort of the language that Fred uses with comedy. So, I could just tell he was a fan and he was very kind and we hit it off. So then we kind of started over the next couple of years, just a dialogue about doing something collaborative. And at the beginning, I assumed he wanted to do music stuff. But when he was like, oh, I'd love to try to do some sketch, you know, with you, or like make these little video shorts, which is what we started out doing. Then I was like, oh, I'm glad we're not doing music, because I have that. I have that covered. But this is actually something that I really would relish. And I did.
Was that I'm recalling one that he did on SNL later, I think. But there was one that I think you guys did together. It was his one man show sketch. Where so that's one of my favorites, and I saw it again recently, and I think the only difference between the Portlandia version or the version you guys did in SNL was that it was just much longer when you guys did it. It was
like... Everything we did early on was so long because there were no boundaries, like there was no parameters, there was no
in a good way,
there was no network saying like, well, geez, this sketch is 8 minutes and a sketch should be around two. So we would just because it was all improvised as opposed to with Portlandia, there were outlines and then towards the end there were scripts, but this was unscripted. And so Fred, especially with one man show, I mean, he really did perform probably an hour long one man show that then our poor editor, and I don't remember edited that, if it was Doug Lusenhop or Jeff Buchanan, but whoever edited that was truly editing a completely improvised one-man show.
Were you in the audience for the whole thing?
And I was in the audience the whole thing. So, I mean,
Well, if that's a good example of, like, how do you not laugh during that? It skewers one-man shows, which we've all seen versions of, and it's not that much more self-indulgent than some of the ones I've seen. I mean, it's not – it's just a fraction – more, I would say, but it's...
Well, I mean, and that's what's so interesting, I think, about real life is it's just how you view something. I mean, if you go to a one-man show, you're there with... It's about intention and also the ways that you receive something, you know, like what's your mindset in terms of, receptivity? So you go into a one-man show, you go in... You're not going there to laugh unless they say something funny, but you're there... for the humanity. And then if you watch a sketch about one man show, they could literally do the same material.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're allowed to laugh.
That's true. That's why, I mean, I'm thinking about the absurdity now about some of the performance activism that's going on now, what you guys would do with that, how ripe for skewering some of that is. There's so much great, obviously, activism happening now. I don't have to tell you, you're in Portland, you're in the midst of it, but I've also seen just as much empty activism and, you know, social media, these influencers who post nothing but selfies and vanity shots, and then they'll be like, seriously, guys, you know, Black Lives Matter, this or that, or, you know, it's, I miss your voices, but I can only imagine what you would do at this time.
Yeah, we did a sketch, actually, about kind of that virtue signaling, where there was a Fred and I, we were playing the sort of Carrie Fred characters, which are much more gullible versions of ourselves. And we were heading off, the sketch is basically exactly what you're talking about. We were heading off to a rally and or a protest. And we just spent the morning letting everyone know that we were going, you know, just like because we had to stop and get, you know, we stopped at a food cart. And what are you guys doing? Well, we're going down to a protest, you know, like just where it was.
He's very proud.
Yeah. And yeah, I think, you know, all of us a bit, you know, especially those of us who are professing like a certain kind of allyship, you know, have to be careful in terms of, like, why we're doing it. And sometimes there's multiple reasons. It's not like, you know, there's the very earnest reason. And then there's, on top of that layer of performance, which I think is hard for almost anyone to eschew right now, because we're just in a society that kind of is always asking and also rewarding people for, you know, performance. And social media is built on, you know, an algorithm of of needing and wanting likes. So it's it's hard to sort of shame people for it, but at the same time, it's so it's cringy when you feel yourself doing it, and it's cringy to watch other people, you know, with these empty performance gestures.
Yeah, cringy is that's a perfect word. Have you read? I just finished reading Talking to Strangers. I'm thinking about your sociolinguist days and how much you would probably love that.
No, book. What is it?
Oh, the Malcolm Gladwell book.
Okay. Just Malcolm Gladwell. You're like, I'm actually glad it was Gladwell, and you weren't like, no, it's one of the top. You know, it's in the canon. Talking to Strangers. You haven't heard of it?
No, Talking to Strangers. Very funny. I'm sure you've read it many times. I should have prefaced that by saying I don't read very much. I'm not one of those people. Now I feel like that's a Portlandia sketch, the book shamer. You haven't read this? But I just feel like you would love it with your
I'll check it out.
Background. So into meeting Fred, how you said it was like 3-4 years went by. At what point do you think, well, we have enough material, we can pitch a show?
I actually cede credit to, that's like a dramatic pause for no reason.
We can add some music to it. We can underscore.
I don't know why I paused at all. I give credit to Fred's manager, Tim Sarkis, who then became my manager. He was watching the stuff that we were making, and we were working under the moniker Thunder Ant at the time. And, you know, we put these videos online and, you know, not a ton of people saw them. But Tim just said, you're developing a sensibility. You guys have a chemistry and it feels unique. And why don't you pitch this as a show? And we made sort of a pilot, or just kind of like a little sizzle reel, where we filmed a unique intro and then added some of the sketches we'd already done. And because Fred was still on Saturday Night Live, it was sort of obligatory that he needed to run it by Lorne Michaels and Andrew Singer, who's the head of TV at Broadway Video, assuming that they would immediately be like, thank you, but no. Like, good luck, Fred, with your little side project.
Weird little side project.
This is too niche for us. But to Lorne's credit, and I think, you know, he is just very insightful, and I think is actually always looking for something that's interesting and has a subversion to it. If you think of like Kids in the Hall or something like that, he was like, no, we want to do this. And so they came on as EPs, and then we took it out to networks to pitch it. And what was interesting at the time was, so we pitched to Comedy Central and they said, no one does sketch. We're not doing sketch. And then after Portlandia came around, they were like, okay. And then they had Key and Peele and the Schumer Show within like a year and a half. But that's fine. I mean, that's, you know, that's no offense.
It's just what the trends were.
That's just how things work. But at the time there was it was kind of a fallow time for sketch.
Did you pitch it to, you didn't pitch it to networks?
No, I mean, we knew it would never function there. Yeah. And at the time it was a little bit before, Netflix existed not quite in the way it does now. We didn't pitch to Netflix or, you know, there was no Amazon, or Hulu. So and IFC were rebranding at the time. They were going to start doing more original content. And so it just kind of worked that they were taking off.
I really loved meeting that team. I'm trying to remember who I'm terrible with names, but I do remember meeting IFC. My brother and I pitched them something. We were so struck by how funny and open they were to different. I always thought of IFC as, you know, the independent film challenge. They show Gus Van Sant movies and whatever.
It's just Quentin Tarantino on repeat. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, exactly. And you know, it was tricky because eventually when Netflix came around and we were really lucky to have Portlandia air on Netflix or stream on Netflix, you know, that's when most people saw the show. And I'm glad that it's still on Netflix, because like the rest of us, you know, people find things years later. You know, I'm watching shows that I didn't see the first time around.
No, I'm like, I'm the guy who, like, 10 years later is like, have you seen Breaking Bad?
It's this little show.
Yeah, and then I want to talk about it, and everyone's like, yeah, we talked about it, like, years ago. I don't really remember the episodes. Yeah, but also, like we were saying, in terms of Portlandia, I think to discover it now is a lot of the themes you're exploring are so, I mean, you pointed to one sketch about, you know, about camera, about things that are happening right now. It's very, I think it remains relevant.
One thing that I like about Portlandia, I guess, is that it kind of never took whiteness as a default. It actually was a show that really explored, I think, like, it didn't take, you know, the category of white people as like, well, this is the norm. It was like, there is some really weird shit here to figure out. Like, and, you know, I think part of that was because, you know, Fred is not white. And, you know, and I'm coming at it as I am white, but I'm queer. So you have like these people who are like, so we also explored like heterosexuality I was always exploring heterosexuality as a queer person and sort of like, why, you know, like it was always kind of this dissection of like things that people sort of prop up as like normal, like whether it's like couplehood or like weird kind of quirkiness that like white people perform as. So it always just had... It just always felt like it was kind of looking at something from the outside as a little anthropological, I guess.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Here's a weird writing tip for work.
Don't. Hear me out.
You can generate your draft fast with Canva Docs.
Canva Docs have an AI text generator built in called Magic Write, which is powered by OpenAI.
You can generate any text you want for work, including meeting agendas, job descriptions, marketing plans, sales proposals, you name it.
Just start with a prompt and you'll have a draft in seconds.
And all you need to do is tweak your draft and you're done.
It's a serious time saver and the perfect way to beat the blank page.
You can even reword sentences, summarize or expand text, and so much more. One thing that sometimes stumps me is writing very basic descriptions for the podcast. And sometimes the hardest part is coming up with the very first couple sentences. Canva's Magic Write is so helpful because once it generates a few thought starters, the rest comes much, much easier. Try Canva Docs with an AI text generator built in.
Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up and we'll meet again.
What was a difference that you recognized between a queer relationship and a heterosexual relationship that you felt was worth exploring or mining?
I think for me, because again, like there's nothing essential about either, you know, but there are these sort of ways that like Maggie Nelson, she talks about in Argonauts, like homonormativity. I mean, there's all these ways that any couple sort of veers into like convention. And then there's ways that any couple, straight, gay, or in between, veers into like... And, you know, things that are unconventional. But there were just these versions of like someone like Peter and Nance, like this just like, like I think as someone, especially in my 20s, like when I was still kind of like grappling with my own sexuality and really wanting to kind of hoping I was just going to be straight. Like, I just was like...
Really? Even into the 20s?
Oh, yeah. Like, I just... I'm only telling you this because it's also in a book I wrote. So this is not like, oh, my God, what a big aha moment. But my dad came out in his mid-50s, and it was all of a sudden...
Wow.
I was like, wait a second. Like, this is such a Gen X, like, 90s version of me. Because now people are so, like, they'd be so excited for their parents to be gay. Yeah. But I was
It'd be cool. Yeah.
But I was like, hey, like, kids are the ones that we're supposed to, like, rebel against you. Like, you need to, like, hold the family down. Like,
you have to be traditional.
You got to be traditional. Like, now I've got to go out and find a husband and get married. It was so complex. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I sound so conservative. Like, get back in the closet, Dad.
That's so funny. But wasn't your dad also the one who, when you were outed of sorts by that article in Spin Magazine, and didn't he say... Carrie, is there something you want to talk to me about? Wasn't he a little weird about how...
Oh, yeah. Well, and he, like, for sure. And also, I mean, he wasn't, like, closeted. He just really didn't know. Like, he wasn't having any kind of secret affairs. Like, he just grew up at a time where he wasn't meeting other gay people. He didn't really know what these feelings were. I mean, or wasn't willing to, like, sort of name them until, you know, he was in the middle of his life. And also with help of the internet and chat rooms, I think, you know, just just to, like, connect with other people. Because, I mean, think of the loneliness sort of, you know, pre-internet for any, you know, buddy that feels marginalized, like, just not recognizing themselves. And my dad was confined to such... straight worlds, you know, he was a corporate lawyer, he lived in the suburbs, so it wasn't like he was just surrounded by examples of, like, queerness, you know, so there was just no reflection,
it's not the Castro.
So there was just not even a place for him to imagine another version of himself until, you know, the internet came around, and all of a sudden you just feel this encroaching, like, familiarity, and you're like, oh, there's so many other people like me, including people his own age that had been living, you know, married to, you know, in straight relationships.
Carrie, was this after they got divorced? Because they got divorced when you were 14. So was this while they were going through that?
No. I mean, after my parents got divorced, my dad dated 3 women. Oh. He was very committed to this narrative of who he is. I mean, I wouldn't even call it a narrative. I mean, it was his life. It was he was the script that he was playing by. And I just think it really...
But did he struggle in those relationships as a result? I mean, God, that's fascinating to me. Did you ever talk to him about, you know, what that struggle was like for him?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think whatever that struggle was only obvious in the lack of struggle once he came out. You know what I mean? Like, because once he came out and now he's married to a man and who he's been with for over 15 years, then all of the sort of almost like partiality, whatever, like that sort of inchoate version of himself, I was only recognizable in the contrast, you know, like it just seemed he didn't seem repressed before. But then when he wasn't repressed, it was like, oh, you were repressed, like in so many ways.
Yeah.
Just even like emotionally, you know, like he just became such a fully formed human once he came out. Like he just was very closed off before. And so it made sense for him to not be super affectionate with a girlfriend because it wasn't like he was super affectionate as a dad. So it wasn't like, oh, you're such a warm guy and that you're so like frigid around your girlfriends. It was just like, no, he's just this kind of uptight, you know, like, dude. Yeah.
So you saw an immediate change in his behavior even toward you. I mean, he was just seemed more comfortable. At peace.
I mean, yes, like all of a sudden just crying at every movie. I mean, suddenly it was like Billy Elliot was just, I mean, can't even, for a while there was a time where he like couldn't even talk about Billy Elliot or the film Big Fish or Brian's Song, that story of
of course, Gail Sayers.
Yeah, I mean, suddenly my dad, it was just like waterworks every time he like talked about like a story that had to do with like a guy and his dad and like coming into his own. And so it wasn't.
I get it. I'm not, no, I mean, I'm, I think heterosexual, but when I'm 54, because I also get emotional at all of those movies.
Well, like, no. And I mean, to be fair, it shouldn't really be assigned to any spectrum of sexuality. It was just that.
No. Just so generational.
It's so generational too that, you know, for my dad, like, you know, he's in his 70s. Like, that just wasn't an option to necessarily go to a movie and come out and be like, it made me really sad. It was like, it was just, he's just had access to so much more of himself. And I think a lot of people now have, hopefully have access to all those parts of themselves from an early age. But I think generationally for him, that just did not exist.
Yeah, for sure. My dad's not the same in that he's repressing some sexuality, but he, I think the older he's gotten and the more in touch with our emotions we've been, and we show them that it's okay. I think he's now more at peace with, you know, expressing those emotions and being connected to.
It must be such a relief to just sort of be given permission, you know, cultural permission, or even like on a smaller level, just familial permission to just not have to hold all that stuff in, you know, to not have to signify maleness. Like as these systems just start to erode, and you know, they're sort of late, you know, long overdue and being like deconstructed. I think it's actually very liberating for a lot of people, because it also takes a lot to hold up those systems. And I think, you know, for certain like cis white men, like not everyone, you know, it's just like let me reexamine this. And by reexamining this, I'm also a better person, you know?
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you had that reaction to your dad, because I would think of all people, you know, you were saying you struggled with this in your 20s and it was something that you were not at peace with for a while. And it's so interesting that your reaction wasn't like, oh, dad, all right. You know, that it was like, wait, what the fuck?
I like it as an example because it is so deeply contradictory. And I just think this idea of holding two truths at once is so important for understanding like the flawed nature of people, you know, and the parts that just don't line up. And I think, you know, we all struggle with accepting that in ourselves and also accepting that in other people, that they can be both things, that they can have done really great things and then like also done something that we disagree with. Like, it's just, you know, that's where humanity comes from. And that's where so much art comes from, you know, are those those places of discomfort, those little like problem areas that we just can't like iron out. You know, that's where the novel springs from, or that's where the song springs from, or all those thorny parts. So as much as I sort of hate to admit that I was like, what? When my dad came out, it's just like, that can be so contradictory that I could like be queer myself, that I could believe so fundamentally in like, you know, human rights and equality and all these things, and then but want my dad just to be the straight dad that, you know. And then my dad embodies these amazing contradictions too, where, you know, again, he's out and proud and married to a man and lives in a small town in Washington State that is very conservative and like stood out as an example. Like, he and his husband, you know, have probably changed minds, you know, one neighbor at a time. But he occasionally will just say the most homophobic shit. You know, I'll just like, I moved into this house in LA, and the couple that lived there before me, it was two men, and my dad and his husband were at my house, and he was asking about the previous owners, and you know, I said it was this couple, two guys, and he's like, oh, they're mirrored ceilings in there. And I was like, what are you talking about, you jerk? Like, first of all, like, I was like, it was so offensive and funny, but I was also like,
you got rid of all the chandeliers.
Yeah, I love it. I was like, dad, Liberace did not own this house. Like, these were just two guys. Like, but I have to say, I kind of love it because people just are really complex. And I was like, Dad, how dare you? But also, that's so you. You're like a guy in your mid-70s making some assumptions.
Yeah, I love that. Well, that is very sketchy. That's very Monty Python. That's very like making fun of this thing that you yourself are participating in. What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say?
Oh, I use the one where it's just the flat, it's like no expression. Do you know what I'm talking about?
But with a mouth?
It has a mouth, and it's just going flat across.
Oh, nice. Okay. And you punctuate anything with that?
Not anything, but
yeah.
I think that's, yeah.
I'm in love with you.
Yeah, I like to use it in lieu of an exclamation point, yes.
If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Basketball.
Ah, you follow basketball?
Yes.
You like it? Yeah. Who's your team?
The Portland Trailblazers.
Trailblazers. That makes sense. Speaking of Portland, do you know Honey Mamas? The company Honey Mamas? It's a Portland mom and pop.
No, sorry. Okay, I should check it out.
Check them out.
Okay.
Yeah, made with... Are you a vegan vegetarian?
No.
Okay, you'll like them though. If you could have one snack food, speaking of Honey Mamas, for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Cashews.
Ah, oh.
That's cashews. Like such a boring, I mean, what? chips and salsa.
Okay.
I mean,
you love cashews that much.
I don't. It's just it's like lightning round means you're getting answers that are
you're right. Okay.
I mean, you got to accept these. What do you think?
Yeah, okay. Yes, you're right. What's your favorite movie of all time?
Oh boy. Mm.
That's a tough lightning one.
That's a really tough lightning
one. How about this, Carrie? What in quarantine have you found yourself watching that brings you kind of comfort?
Okay, well, actually, one movie that I do love that is probably one of my favorite movies is The Last Picture Show.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
I love that one.
Well, I was just watching Easy Riders and Raging Bulls, the documentary. It makes me now want to rewatch Last Picture Show
because I talk about it. It's a great show. Great movie.
Great
TV movie show. Such a great TV show. God. It's on Quibi. It's like three little bite-sized.
The latest picture show. If you had to live somewhere else, where would it be?
France.
Okay. If you could have dinner with three people dead or alive whom you've never met.
Okay. Dorothy Parker, James Baldwin... who would the last person be? Maybe
Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, and that would be a wild. I'll throw Robert Plant. I'll actually throw Robert Plant in there.
Oh.
So I'll do Robert Plant, Dorothy Parker, and James Baldwin.
Wow, that's a hell of a dinner. But by the way, do you remember when Robert Plant was living with Patty Griffin?
Yes.
Did we talk
about
this?
And that's partly why I thought of him because, I mean, he's the only living one out of the two I mentioned, the other two. But he has great stories. I mean, all three of those people would have great stories.
Yeah.
But, I think a musician would be a good third person there.
Just from, oh God, life on
that. I know,
that
was so crazy when he was just living in Austin, like, and just around.
Three doors down from me,
and just
Carrie.
Around. I know, that's wild, yeah. Justin. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I just remember going over, now this is just such a humble brag from both of us, like a joint humble brag. If there's a way to combine the terms circle jerk and humble brag, a circle brag.
Humble circle brag.
A circle brag. So this circle brag that we're doing is about both of us having met Robert Plant and knowing that he's just a great storyteller, such a kind human, and just completely, in a great way, kind of destroying every idea. You know, you think of Zeppelin, like all the grand
the hedonism, and like he must be an asshole, and
he's the opposite, and he's just thinks about art all the time and pushing himself forward as a singer-songwriter. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Ugh. Another one of many reasons I'm so indebted to Liz Lambert, the great Liz Lambert.
Hi, Liz.
And that album, so much to talk about. Okay, sorry. Well, who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, probably Gonzo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you and I talked to Joel McHale yesterday, who's also from outside of Seattle.
And he said Gonzo, too?
Gonzo too.
Yeah, we were required if you grew up in this part. Yes.
Okay. Well, I wish I had known that. I wouldn't have asked. If you could be one age for the rest of your life physically, what would you pick? Knowing what you know now, having your experiences.
I would say probably 37.
Ah, okay. That was a good one. If you could be, would you rather people call you unattractive or unfunny?
Oh, unattractive for sure.
Uh-huh. Which I'm not saying they would.
But let me just set it up for all the trolls out there. Uh-huh. Well, she's both. Well, too bad, because you're both.
Yeah, I like beating the trolls to the punch.
Yeah.
Yeah, would you? Oh, I hate trolls. Which Golden Girl? The idea of anybody trolling you, I hold you in such esteem, and like I just think you're such a.
Trolls are universal. Great. Trolls are like the common. Yeah. It's the great equalizer. We each have a troll. Yeah. We each have a little troll traveling around with us. Yes.
And in us, yeah.
And in us, yeah.
Which Golden Girl do you most identify with? Dorothy, Blanche, Rose, or Sophia?
Sophia.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I can see that. Okay. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Yeah, duh. And the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Oh, this is a real tough one. You know what? The real asshole in me will just be like, the Kinks.
That's a cool answer. Yeah. I do love the Kinks. And I was just listening to a great, I was listening to to Slater Kinney, and on Spotify, a cover of Lola came on. And I thought, oh shit, did you guys do this? And
no, was it the Raincoats, Lola's?
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. No, but really, I mean, I probably would say the Beatles.
Yeah. I know you got to go. I could do this for another hour and a half.
No, me too. One thing is it's going to be 100 here today. So I just have to get Cricket, who is my dog, out before it is 100.
Of course. Okay, go.
Because if
do
she
it.
Perishes out there in the heat, you will be getting a phone call.
My God, I feel so.
We'll be
for the
doing
rest
a
follow.
We'll be doing a follow up podcast.
Oh my God! I mean, if you don't follow Carrie on Instagram, you should, and then you'll be familiar with Cricket. Is just the
and the best. My apologies. I have taken a long social media break this summer, mostly so I can focus on what's in front of me, which is my city, which is going through a lot, my friends. And just my mental health, but
apology not accepted.
I mean, but sure, follow me, and eventually I'll post something.
But speaking of Carrie, sorry, really quick, what is a good? What can people follow in terms of what is happening in Portland? Any friends of yours who are?
There's some great organizations. Don't Shoot PDX is a great organization to follow. POICRAHS, which is a long acronym, but they're another great organization. Okay, so one is a great Instagram to follow is PDX BLM Events. And so every day they post, like, if, you know, you want to get involved today, here's where people are just doing sign waving. Here's where there's an actual march or rally or protest. Here we're meeting up for, you know, a mental health check-in. Like, there's just so many different events. They kind of bring together all of them. Care Not Cops, PDX is great too. But Don't Shoot PDX is a longstanding organization here. And they've been on the front lines for years and years. And I think if I was going to recommend one place, I would check them out.
Don't Shoot PDX, PDX BLM Events, and of course, Carrie to see Cricket updates.
Yes.
Eventually. Well, my apologies to Cricket and Cricket's bladder.
She's fine. She has been let out to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
We're just going to go, we have to exercise. We have to exercise.
Oh, 100 degrees.
No,
good
she's
Lord.
Not just, she's not just down, like with her leg downstairs with her legs crossed, like holding it in. Sweaty. No, she's fine. You clearly understand how animals work.
Oh yeah. My God. I haven't had one in way too long though.
It's really good to see you.
You too. It is. If I do make that trip, if I do that RV trip, I will let you know if I'm in the area and
We'll hang out. We can go on like a socially distanced walk or something.
I would love that. Okay.
Okay, take care.
Well, that happened.
So that happened. I don't know.
Whatever.
Which one is it?
It happened.
So that just happened.
The important part is us saying it happened.
So that just happened.
That happened.
Carrie studied sociolinguistics. How cool. Very cool.
How cool is that? I didn't know that.
I wish my college had offered that.
Well, and who is, and so someone in a letter said you would excel at that, they think.
I'm not saying I would, but it just sounds like an interesting field.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be interested in it, for sure.
It makes sense when you consider what they did on Portlandia. A lot of that was exploring the absurdity of human behavior through language.
Yes, with such nuance, too. And you mentioned that to her. By the way, why didn't you tell her you like Portlandia?
Shut up. There was a split second. My brain is slower now that I'm older. I can feel like information traveling up. And it was like, for a very split second, I was like, what? My friend was like, now, he's joking.
But that satire is so good and so effective, I think, because it is so subtle. Some of those bits are so true to life.
I know.
Like the way they skewer certain types of people or situations, it's so brilliant because it's just slightly heightened.
And sometimes don't you meet people, especially actors, I mean we meet people in like showbiz, who are themselves heightened and they feel like Portlandia characters. I mean I've heard people in, I'm thinking like Austin or Silver Lake or like kind of trendy, hip, liberal areas where they go on about the ethically sourced food that they're eating, you know, and they come just short of that sketch where Kumail is taking their order and describing where the chicken's from and what the chicken's name is. Like, that is a brilliant sketch because it is so close to how people behave.
And I think Portland happens to be
I haven't
spent that much time there, but it happens to be kind of the extreme version of a lot of these people that do exist throughout the country.
For sure.
I think it's concentrated in Portland, but you see that everywhere.
You
see that in Austin, certainly. You see it in New York.
Yeah, but when Portlandia started, it was mostly a Portland thing. Austin, there were a few pockets of that kind of like hipster.
Like ultra hipster.
Ultra, but Brooklyn was becoming like that. But I think now, you're right. I think now like you see it in Indianapolis. I'm sure there's an enclave like that in Orlando. I've seen it in Tucson. Like, yeah, you see that everywhere now.
I haven't spent much time in Portland. Have you only been there for the show?
I think so, and I loved it.
I was there for two nights once, and I remember being so impressed by the food and the cleanliness.
Yeah.
I didn't see one piece of litter, and I walked all around the city.
I did
so much walking. I didn't see one cigarette butt, one wrapper of anything.
Well,
incredible.
You know what I think part of that is? And I was talking about this yesterday with a future guest, Pete Holmes. I can mention it. I know you're going to shame me, but...
Well, he's not a future guest because you have an interview.
Right. I'm going to be on his show. Sorry. But I was talking about how much it frustrates me, to what extent it frustrates me when I see people littering, and how I take that as like almost like a personal affront. Like they're going to... Just how disrespectful it is.
I am so offended by that, too.
Oh, God, it infuriates me. And I want to, like, take it. And I get angry. I want to shove it in their face. And
it's so disrespectful.
It is.
I was at Marshall's a few weeks ago, and I saw this.
Marshall Lewis?
And I saw this this person get back in their car, and they had bought so many pieces of clothing. They just so casually took the tags off and sprinkled them out of their car window of their parked car. I was so enraged. But what do you do?
What do you do? Well, didn't
call the cops?
Didn't Maggie want to shame that? Like,
I wasn't going to include that part of the story.
Sorry.
But yeah, she like walked up and just stared at her, and I was like, "Get back in the car! You're going to like cause a scene."
Yeah, Maggie's like one of, like Max, our dog Max. Like Maggie's like one of those little dogs that doesn't know its size and is like goes after the big dogs. Will she be flattered by that or insulted?
It's hard to say.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I don't think she'll be insulted.
Yeah.
Because it's so true.
And it also involves a dog, and she loves dogs.
And she's small.
She loves
little
dogs. Yes.
And she knows that she does it, so
yeah.
I don't see why she would be.
I hate it so much. But getting back to Portland, I wonder if that's has something to do with my love of Portland, which is like I feel like the people there, there's a respect that they have for their city, for their for the sidewalks, you know, even.
Right.
That you don't see it because that's a communal, that takes a communal, that's a communal effort to keep a city like that that clean, I think. I'm sure they have a good sanitation department and all that, but.
Small things can be so incredibly revealing about a person.
Yeah.
And it seems little, like not waiting your turn at a four-way stop, let's
yep.
say.
Yep.
That doesn't, not waiting your turn doesn't make you a terrible person or anything, but it's indicative of a very selfish mentality of like, I need to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And where I have to go is more important than where you have to go. Oof. And it's very simple, but it's revealing about a person.
Yeah.
Same with littering. It's the same mentality.
It's also cutting somebody off. Cutting somebody off or not moving if you're in the fast lane and you're going 40 miles an hour on the highway. Or if you make a mistake, how about this one? This one kills me. You make a mistake, somebody cuts you off, whatever, and they don't wave. Or you let somebody in, there's no wave, you don't get the wave.
Speaking of cutting off, I found it very
good cutoff.
Impressive that she would never cut you off in the conversation.
Yeah.
She has this, and it's part of what makes her smart and confident. Mm-hmm. But cool and respectful.
She's a good listener.
Good listener that she wouldn't jump in and she would kind of wait for you to be done making a point and then she would talk. And it's respectful, but it also demands that the person she's talking to makes a point.
Well,
like, has a point that has a beginning, middle, and end.
And mine often don't have ends.
They sometimes don't.
I get frustrated.
Well, in the beginning they didn't, but I felt like you...
I got
you warmed into the conversation.
Here's why. I knew you were going to notice that. Because, because it's noticeable. But also, I am so... I admire her so much, I think. I think
her intellect.
Her intellect. And I think there's a part of me that is intimidated by that intellect. It's also the way we grew up. We grew up... I mean, not to blame everything on our parents, but that was something to be valued in our house, was like in intellect.
And it's a good blame.
Yeah. That's true. I think that's part of it. I would get, because she was waiting for a point, and I started.
You got nervous. I got nervous. You wanted to get to the point.
Well, like I'm doing now.
Right. And I noticed sometimes when she would try to make a point, she would stop herself and be like, well, I'm going to start that again.
Yes.
And go back to the beginning.
Yes.
Because she really values the way she puts her points together.
Yes. Yeah. She values language.
Yes.
Sociolinguist.
Which is one of the reasons that show is so good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think we just figured her out.
Cracked the impressive code.
I liked how during the lightning round, you asked what her favorite snack was, and she's like, cashews. And you were like, really, cashews? Yeah. And she's like, no, not really, but it's a lightning round, so yes. I felt like I had to say something quickly.
Well, she was literal. I mean, she was like,
yeah.
It's how...
It's also a gut thing. It's
it like, should be. We've talked about that.
Cashews is also something that, even though it's maybe not the most delicious snack
somebody
food...
else said cashews.
It's a good one to pick because it's reasonably healthy.
Yeah, people have said almonds.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about how much we love Portland, so I just want to send our best wishes.
Because they're going through a shitstorm.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when that happened, I know I shouldn't be, you don't want to be prejudiced. You don't want to put one city above another. You know, we're all people in this together. But there was something about hearing what was going on in Portland that hit me a little bit harder than.
Because they're so
respectful and they have community oriented. And
they don't litter.
They don't litter.
I value cities that don't litter.
You don't both have to value cities that don't litter.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. A litter. Okay. This is from Ella. You know what that means in Spanish. She.
Oh.
Thanks, Duolingo.
Didung.
Not an ad. Oh, that's Christian hates the sound that it makes. Duung.
If anyone's ever heard the Duolingo app, you'll know how annoying that sound is.
Or.
Dung dung.
Or satisfying if you're doing the Duolingo app and not just overhearing it.
Sure.
Okay. Subject. Some. Back to Ella. Ella. Oh, she must be sick of that.
Oh, yeah.
That would a great song, though. When the sun shines, it shines together.
Whoa.
Ding, ding, dong, ding, ding, ding.
So you sound just like Rihanna. How did you do that?
I've studied her.
Ding, 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 dong.
Ella. Okay. Subject. Please cut that out, me. Subject.
Please don't cut that out.
Overruled. You're the producer. Some Four Loko /condiment would you rather's. Great. And wholesome grandpa content. Great. Hi, Justin and Christian. I hope this finds you well. Smiley face. My name is Ella. I'm 25 and from Westchester, New York.
Oh, I like Westchester.
Yeah.
I dated a lady from Westchester.
Who's that?
From Rye.
Oh, was she Rye?
Sometimes.
Yeah. I dated a lady from Westchester, too.
Wow. You don't pull that to date ladies from Westchester?
I've been an avid listener of the pod since it started a year ago. The Grandma Jody episode is my absolute favorite. Oh, hope she's doing well and got some new hearing aids. She hasn't. She had it worked on. She took it into the shop to have it. And we haven't gotten her one. I mean, it's our fault, but she won't let us. I keep asking her what brand, for her doctor's information, she won't.
You just saw her the other day.
I saw her the other day.
And she's doing very well.
She is, but her hearing aid is still making that I could hear it. It's like, it's making sounds a little bit like a spacecraft in Close Encounters of the
Third Kind. Or a mosquito?
A little bit like a mosquito, but like a digitalized mosquito. Ugh. And she can't hear anything. And and everything else about her seems so healthy. Like, she's so present. She hasn't really missed a step. It's crazy. I introduced her, I was given a cannabis plant, and there's a funny video I post. Check it out on my Instagram. Back to the letter. Anyways, I just want to thank you both for the work you're doing and for putting out such wonderful and engaging content. God, that's nice. Thanks, Ella. I love listening to the pod while I'm watercoloring or doing other doodling. How cool.
Doodles.
I doodle. It brings me so much joy and is such a fun and anxiety-relieving distraction during these weird, scary times. I'm writing to you for a couple of reasons. First, I have two would-you-rather questions for you. Great. And I would love to hear your answers. Awesome. Thanks, Ella. Okay, number one. Would you rather never be able to put any condiments on sandwiches for the rest of your life? I love that. Or have to eat 8 tablespoons of plain, warm mayo every morning for the next 4 years? Note, knowing Justin and Christian from listening to the podcast, I understand this may lead into a bigger conversation of what defines a condiment. I will leave that up to you both to decide.
Wait, hold on. Remind me how...
So the first one is...
for the rest of your life, condiments?
Never be able to put any condiments on sandwiches for the rest of your life.
Now, do you think that extends to wraps as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I think. That's a sandwich.
Okay.
Or, I mean, the Earl of Sandwich might disagree. Isn't that funny that he probably did all these remarkable things or not? Maybe he was a lazy rich guy and just give me, I'm holding my scepter in my other hand and I.
See, I think the Earl of Sandwich has, remains popular just because he has a funny name.
Like General So?
No, because General So is delicious chicken.
No, General, that's what I'm saying. General So did a lot of shit. I mean, he was a general.
So what? All right, let's get back to the would you rather. No condiments and sandwiches or 4 years of 8 tablespoons of mayo every morning.
You get used to it though, I bet, the mayo.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
I don't hate mayo.
I think condiments on sandwiches are somewhat overrated, so I would definitely lose condiments on sandwiches.
I know Ella left this up to us, but what about burgers? Burger.
Let's include that in sandwiches.
Okay.
Sandwiches are anything that has equal tops and bottoms and a filling in the middle. So that's grinders, that's burgers.
Grinders.
I would. I'm not.
Think about a grinder.
I'm not a huge condiment person.
No tahini.
See, even burgers. I like ketchup on burgers, for instance. Yeah. But I also like burgers without ketchup. I'm not a big condiment person. And I also don't hate mayo, but the thought of having to do have 8 tablespoons of mayo. Also, it'd also be a gross way to start the day for 8 years,
and
4 years.
You're right. And what if you only lived another 4.5 years? You know, then it's I should have taken
that. That's true. I would definitely lose the condiments. Because if you have good ingredients in a sandwich, you don't need condiments. Condiments are to cover up kind of mediocre ingredients.
You know what you would miss is that Thanksgiving, that turkey sandwich at the Firehouse Deli. You wouldn't get cranberry sauce.
Fine, yeah. But it's been a year or two since I've had that.
And you know another nice thing about taking the condiments one is that it might encourage you to eat less sandwiches. I don't think sandwiches are all that
fewer
healthy.
Sandwiches, but I would also say
you're right. Fewer.
That Thanksgiving sandwich that is comprised of turkey stuffing and cranberry sauce. Mm-hmm. I don't know if cranberry sauce would be considered a condiment.
Yep.
I don't think so.
Yep.
It's its own thing. It's its own ingredient. It's not wiped on like mustard. What's a condiment?
Exactly. I think it has the similar texture to other condiments.
So anything
like relish,
anything wet is a condiment.
Yeah, I think so. Hmm. I think so. Any sort, like, think about that. What is that, like, au jus that's put on some of those?
Au jus.
What's au jus? What sandwich is that put on?
Like a beef, like a dip, like a beef. French dip.
Beef. Beef is a gross word.
Sure okay. is. All right.
Yeah, I would choose the condiment one.
You mean getting rid of the condiment?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
me too.
Number two, but great one, Ella. Number two, would you rather drink 48 ounces of milk-flavored Four Loko or Four Loko-flavored milk? Okay, so 48 ounces of either milk-flavored Four Loko or Four Loko-flavored milk. I would
do the milk.
The milk, yeah, yeah.
I have
every day or just once? 48 ounces. I can't drink that Four Loko anymore.
Well, Four Loko, also, I don't really know. They each have a different flavor, so I don't know what a Four Loko flavor is exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's like wacky wild berry. It's like
So, but just in terms of the flavor, I don't really
with like a creamy texture. Is that what it would be?
Maybe
a Four Loko flavored milk.
But I would choose the milk. I mean, both would be disgusting, but I would choose the milk that tasted like Four Loko.
Yeah, probably just healthier too.
Healthier and also the alcohol of Four Loko. I haven't had Four Loko in about 10 years, but I remember. It's so potent, this stuff, that I remember once I had one, and they're tall cans, and they're so loaded with sugar and alcohol.
Didn't we have...
I had one of them, and I went from sober to wasted in, like, 7 minutes.
Yes.
It was the crazy experience.
I know. Weren't we celebrating something?
We were.
Like, selling a case of you or something? Yeah.
We were celebrating.
We were like, let's crack open a Four Loko and celebrate.
That stuff is so dangerous. So imagine having 48 ounces. I feel like I'd be in the hospital. So I would definitely pick the milk.
48 ounces, yeah. And although I have not been drinking milk, it's been really nice. Who cares? Second, something that's been making me so happy recently has been talking to my grandpa Joe. Ah, good name. I know you and your listeners don't know him, but since quarantine started, he's been writing his, quote, life story on Facebook. That's so cool. He just discovered Facebook and is truly thriving. Anyways, I've included a video of him. Oh, wish we could see it. I'm reading this off a piece of paper, so obviously.
We'll be able to look it up and see it then.
Yeah. She attached it, and that I beg of you to watch. Despite not knowing him, I feel very strongly that you will find this Grandpa Jay content uplifting and hilarious, and I hope it brings a smile to your face. I want to see it. In the video, he's reminiscing about a story from his childhood growing up in Little Italy. Oh, that's hard for me to say.
Little Italy.
The street he lived on was actually renamed Moscow Street. Wow. Our last name. To honor his father, my great-grandpa. Wow. Cool. Not only is he the best storyteller I know, but he is truly, and I don't use this word lightly or ever, iconic, as the kids say. Do you know the kids also say facts? Have you heard of that?
You just told me about that.
Oh, yeah. So when something's right, my friend just told me about that. She goes, it's like, oh, true?
Facts.
Have you heard that?
No, but I don't hate that.
No, facts.
I don't like when people overuse iconic, but I do believe Ella when she says her grandfather's iconic.
I do, too. I like Ella. Okay. All right. And then back to Ella. All right, well, not sure if you made it to the end, but if you did, wow, I really appreciate it. Give me some credit, Ella. Sending lots of love and gratitude to you both. Thanks so much for what you do. That's one of the best letters. All the best, Ella. All the best back, Ella. That's so cool. I can't wait to check out Grandpa Joe. The story is called Louis the Butcher Story. I want to hear that. It's amazing they named the street after him. I want to check out that street, too.
Let's check out the video after.
Okay.
Because it doesn't make for great podcast.
No,
content.
No. Just me talking about wanting to see a video. I know. Okay. Thanks, Ella. And thank you. Ella's cool, as is our guest today, Carrie. She remains
Ella
cool.
Seems like she has some Carrie Brownstein cool energy.
I agree. And what a compliment. Maybe the highest. Oh, and thanks to Carrie. We talk about it on the show a lot. Our movie, Lady of the Manor, which we're very excited for everyone to see.
Oh, you singing that song to her in the beginning.
Oh, is it weird?
No, it was fun.
How would you sing the song?
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't try.
I forgot the name of it.
I know.
I know it so well. And she knew right away what I was talking about. I mean, not that because the rendition was so good. Because she had been... privy to us trying to get this song in our movie. Anyway.
So if you guys want to write in, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com. And we love letters and would you rathers.
Yes.
And preferably both in one letter.
Like,
but not necessary.
Yeah. They don't all have to be as good as Ella's letter.
No, it's a high bar.
So thanks to everyone listening and to the cool Ella and Carrie. Thank you guys. And we'll we'll be talking to you next week.
Oh.
I haven't eaten.
See you next week.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-boom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
And
Megan Monaco.
Senior producer is
Michelle
Meesh
Lanz.
Our audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
With executive producers.
Executive producers are
Marshall. You don't want to say with executive producers?
It would change the way we do
people
it.
People would be so thrown by it. as well as executive producers.
Marshall Louis.
And Hernan
Lopez.
For a company called, does that bother you?
Not so much.
Okay. Wondery.
Wondery.
Okay.
Have a good week.
It is somewhat growing on me.
Yeah. Because when this mustache is growing.
I don't like it, but when I first saw it, I was repulsed by it. And now I don't find it repulsive.
Yes.
I kind of think it's sexy.
Yes. That's weird.
I
and like,
you should
you know,
it too.
It's like an Errol Flynn. I mean,
yeah.
Well, yeah. If you had, but you don't have an Errol Flynn face or demeanor. I mean, it's a good thing you don't have an Errol Flynn
face. Do I have more of an Errol Flynn face or demeanor?
I mean,
face, which, because he was a maniac. He was like a drunken sex addict. I mean, you're lucky you don't want an Errol Flynn demeanor, I don't think. But how about this? An Errol Flynn persona on screen, like a swashbuckler?
Yeah.
Or his face? Which one is more similar?
Yeah. Face, probably.
I guess your face.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
Be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, la, la. Where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.